to the John Covey Podcast, the place to thrive and not just survive. Are you looking for business ideas, sales and marketing advice, or some motivation and courage to chase the life you desire? John Covey is a multi-award winning success coach, helping you close the gap between where you are and where you want to be in the easiest and most enjoyable way. Interested in learning more about working with John? Head over to johncovey.com, where you will find a selection of free tools, content, and information. Okay, let's dive into this episode. Here's your host, John Covey.
Helen, welcome to the John Covey Podcast. This is episode 89. Helen Williams, how are you doing?
Thanks very much. Good to see you. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. Do you know, we were saying, wasn't we, off camera, that, you know, for some two people that's in the similar space from the same city, we've never even met.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. We had to make this happen, and it takes a worldwide pandemic and lockdown to absolutely
to bring it together.
Make it happen. But hey ho, we're here now.
Indeed. Good stuff. So Helen, you're from Hue, which is helping entrepreneurs win. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Tell me more about that.
It's based on my initials. It's based on the business name as well, of helping entrepreneurs win, and it's based on three pillars of the business, which is health, excellence, and wealth. Mm. So it's a well thought out brand name. It's not just a case of the fact of, you know, oh, it's Helen Williams and, oh, let's guess her middle name. That, you know, there's a lot more to it and a lot more thought process behind it than that.
Is the middle name in the E?
Yeah.
Can we guess? Listeners.
Have a guess.
Listeners, if you can put your comments in, and see if you can guess what it is, and we'll do a follow-on.
It's not rocket science, honest, but it's one of the first questions I normally get. It's like,
Esmeralda.
Nice name, though, that. And it's a good wine as well.
Yeah, totally.
Esmeralda. It's a Spanish wine.
Oh, really? I'll tell you where on that.
it's specific to helping entrepreneurs win, purely because that was the area that I wanted to focus in on for entrepreneurs, new business startups, and the support network and mechanism that I feel needed a lot more attention to. And that was based around my own experience, basically, and what I found, what I needed through my own transition from corporate into becoming my own business owner, like creating businesses and what have you. And then looking, you know, what was out there and what was missing pieces. That's how it's all formed in a nutshell.
That's great. I mean, that's incredible how you've got the name together, though. You know, helping entrepreneurs win, health, excellence, and wealth. Did you say that's what you said, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, right,
and then,
yeah.
And then Helen something Williams. Do we spend a bit of time working on the name right now, or do we just move on?
We'll move on.
Cool. So,
it means I can never get married.
Oh, sorry, say again.
It means I can never get married.
Oh, really?
My name is always Williams.
Always Williams. Helen Evergreen Williams.
I like that.
There we go. So, Sheffield International Venues, Doncaster Rovers FC, you spent a bit of time in the hospitality sector. Like, tell me about that. I mean, like, what did that give you?
That was where I went into that sector purely through hospitality and events, because that was what my master's was in. I graduated from Leeds with a bachelor's degree, and then went on to do a master's. And at that time, through the degree and going to university and all through that time, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. I am that prime example of just following the pattern and following the encouragement of what you should be doing and what career path you should be taking. And, you know, just literally just going like that. I was quite rebellious. It was a little bit too touch and go whether I would even pass my exams to get to university. I'd been written off and literally spent more time in the pub than I did studying and turning up to lessons. However, I did scrape it out of the bag and ended up going to university. But for the first part of the degree, I didn't still know what I was doing. It was a case of, you know, I've started something, so I'll finish it because I'm very determined. You know, I don't give in easily. Yeah. And even though it wasn't apparent how, at that point in time, how it would all sort of come to light and pan out for me, let's say, I knew that I needed to complete it because the answers aren't always given to you there and then. You know, you can't always see the direction that you're going, and you just need to trust that you're putting one foot in front of the other. So I continued, I did the master's, but the master's then was homing down on something that I was passionate about, and that was events, hospitality, like the organisation over things, and just literally homing in on that. That then took me to the football club over in Doncaster, spent nearly 6 years there. Did a whole host of roles and what have you within the commercial department there. Fantastic. When the new stadium was opening for the Keep Moat and all of that transition, we were literally selling the hospitality off a building site at first. It was hard hats and wellies and selling the dream per se for people in Doncaster and the businesses. So I worked alongside a lot of the business owners that were buying memberships and hospitality products. And then it took me on to Sheffield International Venues, again, a similar kind of role, hospitality, events, advertising, sponsorship, all the partnerships and the affiliate schemes and things. And then it took me down to London. So I moved up in the world, if you like, and Sheffielders, please don't be offended by it. But in terms of venues and the event space that I was working in, you know, I was selling packages and products for Wimbledon and Royal Ascot and Twickenham and Lord's Cricket and the Polo out in Windsor and things like that. You know, it was really something special. But then it wasn't what I wanted to do. It was sure. apparent to me that, you know, the money was good, the lifestyle was quite good. I got to see some amazing events and articles, met some amazing people along the way, and then I was just like, it was making me unhappy and it was making me ill. And there was always something burning within me, all through the fact of, you know, I'd done some great work, but something just wasn't right. And I just needed to put my finger on it and take responsibility. And basically, I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire.
So, I mean, just before we go on like any further on that, just going back to what you were saying about the hospitality and being organised and planning things. I mean, are you genuine? Like, are you generally, like, would you say that you're quite organised, or do you find that a challenge to be organised?
I'm organised in some ways. I'm always known as the organiser. Like, I make things happen. Mm-hmm. That's what I class as organising. Like, if you saw the state of my desk now, you'd think, what a hypocrite you are. You are nowhere near organised. I am, but it's an organised mess, right?
It's organised chaos.
I'm all right with that, because, I don't go for perfection in terms of organising. Like, I kind of know where things are in my office.
Sure.
I don't have like meticulous organisation to it.
Sure.
But my organisation is on the realm of make things happen, organising.
Yeah, love it, absolutely love it. So in terms of like, because it sounds like you're very sales as a natural ability, I would say. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
You tend to find...
Sorry, go on.
No, it's okay. No, you tend to find that with sales, you either are messy and organization doesn't come easy, or you're completely anal on it. And so I think you find yourself to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I am somewhere in the middle. But I'm more of a right brainer, right? I'm the one that can't be tamed. I'm the one that's the kind of life and soul, the ones that wants the action, you know, the ones that want to make things work and happen. Like, while you're wasting time, how I perceive it, wasting time putting things into meticulous order and being like OCD and anal over something, you know, you could have been having a little party over here and having a good time out of it. Like I'm more on the action. Yeah. So if I'm going to be in the middle, I'm more right brain than anything else.
Sure. Are you a people person in that sense? Then you'd rather. The way I describe it, so let me give you a little, my explanation of it, is that when I describe different personality types, I'll say that you're either the kind of personality type who, if you're going to put a swing set together, you'll not even entertain the idea of doing it. You'll just hire somebody in to do it for you. The second type is that you'll bring all your friends round, have a party, and put it up with all your friends. The third type is that you'll count every single piece to make sure all the pieces, and you'll lay them out first to make sure they're there. Or the final one is that you'll look at it and think, no, I don't like that idea, I'm going to try and recreate it.
I would be a mixture of the first two. I would but this is the organization in me. I'd get somebody else in to do it. Mm-hmm. Once it's ready, then I'll get the party started.
Okay, yeah. So you split. I get that. Yeah, strong on both. That's good. That's really good. So tell me about London then. So you went to London. You was promised the streets paved with gold.
Well, that's what we're told, aren't we, from up north? Get down to London. That's where all the magic happens. Yeah. You find all your riches and all your success.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great time. I spent five years in London. Sure. Two of those was in employment and mm-hmm. three to self-employment before I came back up to Yorkshire. Great place. I you know, it's not ended. My love affair with London has not ended. I've still got property down there, still got a lot of contacts and connections down there. Sure. And I do intend to spend some time back down in the city of London, definitely.
Got you. How have you found the transition, you know, in terms of doing business in London compared to doing business in Sheffield? Because obviously you've got two completely different demographics.
Completely. It has been a massive transition. It was literally like me setting up another business again, because yes, we have we have the powers of social media and online presence, which, you know, I'm huge at. I love it, I promote it, I'm a massive advocate of it. But until you're actually in and around, kind of particularly in local towns and cities, then you need to actually have built that personal relationship up and that personal profile up. In the city of London, obviously, because it's, you know, you've got a wide demographic from all over the world, a lot more than up here.
Sure.
I find people a lot more ambitious. Mm. They're a lot more open to suggestion. They're a lot more open-minded to what you've got to offer. And they want that. They want to go out of their way to find it and come to you and engage with you. Right. Up here, they make you work 25 times harder for probably 25 times less. Yeah. But that's... You know, that it's been a great transition. It's been a bit of a humbling experience for me, because when I first started off in business, you know, I'd done a great job in terms of my personal brand, then building that up, and then developing the business off the back of it. Right?
Yeah.
The business in the first 12 months, like, for the uptake of coaching clients and the engagement that I got was absolutely incredible. But then after, coming back up to Yorkshire, I had to do all that again. So it was very humbling, on the fact that you can never rest on your laurels. Mm. And that's a great reminder of the fact of, you know, people were saying, oh, it's great, you're coming back home. You know, you pick up on all your connections. Well, it's a completely different kettle of fish when you're coming home than to a different environment. You know, people move on as well. Yeah. And I left in one corporate role and coming back with the businesses under my belt. Promoting different things.
Sure.
So you can't just walk into your old life and your old kind of network circles and things.
Yeah.
You have to then, you know, dig in deep, roll your sleeves up and get in the mix of things and get out there knowing people and getting people to know you.
Got you. Why Sheffield? Like, I mean, you've been to London, so you've experienced the best that England's got to offer, or seemingly the best that England has to offer. Like, why come back to Sheffield? Like, why not go somewhere else and take on a new city or place?
One step at a time, John. That's the plan eventually. Okay. It was Sheffield because it was property-led. if I'm honest. That was the purest reason behind it. It was property led.
What do you mean by that? When you said property led, what do you mean?
Because I had that's my other property. That's my other business is a property business. Just to let listeners know on that. Mm-hmm. Don't want to make any assumptions. I had an empty property then back up in Sheffield that I was struggling then to re let out.
Okay.
And different strategies that we had going on, myself and my partner, for buying and selling. We had a huge project up here in Yorkshire as well, the biggest of the kind that we've done to date. Mm. And it just made sense then to get London making money for us, mm-hmm. and coming back to where, you know, we had a little bit of gap in the portfolio.
Got it.
when you own different properties as well, you know, you move around as well. I do feel like a bit of a gypsy over the last few years.
So I mean, let's talk about property then right now, because property is a passion for both of us, something that we both do this. I mean, tell me about that business. So what is the business then? So are you buying, you're flipping, are you sourcing, all of the above?
Don't source. It's I don't have this property business is not anything that's front of house. So I've just been saying about a massive on social presence and online engagement. There's nothing that's front of house that's a transactional purpose for my property business. It's behind closed doors.
Sure.
It's private and everything else. But we do a mixture of strategies through buying and holding, flipping. Mm-hmm. We've got different strategies in terms of locations throughout the country, predominantly then London, Yorkshire and Scotland as well.
Cool.
Just mixed bag. But different towns and cities are definitely on the radar.
Yes, definitely so. Definitely. Why not as well? Why not? What kind of properties? I mean, are you doing predominantly HMOs? What kind of properties?
HMOs, the single lets, residential, commercial, HMOs, serviced accommodations,
right.
and then residential flips.
Cool. Just for everyone that might not be familiar, I can't speak. Just for everybody that might not be familiar with HMOs, do you want to just give them a brief explanation of what an HMO is?
Yeah, it stands for houses of multiple occupation. So basically, you know, you've got a residential property that could have between 4 and 8 or whatever bedrooms within it that you create. It's basically shared living space. You've got your private bedrooms and bathrooms in some, and then the rest of it's shared living. So normally it's for younger people, young professionals, people that don't necessarily get on a housing ladder or don't want a single AST to themselves. But need somewhere that's, you know, that's decent to live as well. And awesome. I mean, it's massive. It's a massive industry for HMOs.
I've not looked at. I don't have any HMOs. I did consider them, but do you find that it's become more challenging with a HMO, especially with like, is it Article 4? Article 4, is it?
Yes and no. To be honest, the specification that we run to anyway has always been over and above what the regulations require. Mm. The Article 4 is only being put in is to stop saturation within certain areas.
Sure.
And I'll be honest, I agree with that. Like, nobody wants a complete area to be overturned and overrun by a certain way of living. Mm. You know, we live in communities, therefore communities should be a mixed spread of everything. Like, I look at it from both, you know, both sides of the coin. Yes, I'm a property investor, but yeah, I'm a decent human as well. Like, I'm not one of those what you call them, NIMBYs, not in my backyard, of a fact of like it's good enough for me to invest it, but I don't want to be faced with it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like raise your own standards how you would want to operate.
Sure.
And it's like that about treat others how you want to be treated.
Yeah.
This is all the same thing, you know. But yeah, HMOs in themselves, they are challenging, but the biggest key to that is the management.
Yeah. Do you manage yourself, or do you have an agency that looks after it for you?
Just ask me about putting up a swing ball or whatever it is. I think I run my own properties.
Yeah. You just have a partner. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I look after my agents and I look after my partners and things well. And we do it, like, I believe in teamwork. Like, there's no way that I could be looking after tenants and the actual property upkeep, maintenance, financial aspects of it. I've got a huge, huge team around me behind closed doors.
I did my first one myself because I wanted to, because I was advised to. I was advised to manage your first one.
Yeah.
So you can get a taste for what it's about.
Yeah.
And I think that within 3 months, I'd farmed it off to somebody else to manage for me, because they were calling up saying things like, the light bulb's gone in the bathroom. Can like what do we do? Dude, you change it.
Yeah.
Well, don't you do that. It's a light bulb. Do you know?
Yeah, it's I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. Again, it's what we were talking about before. Yeah, we pressure core here about working out, doing something that shows how willing you are to do it and understand the process.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. I have managed my own properties in the past. Mm. Like, I would not do that as a full-time job. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be an estate agent. I don't want to be a letting agent. There are people there in that profession to do it properly. And I just, yeah, I've learned the hard way in terms of managing properties.
Sure.
You know, small claims courts, solicitor's right. fees, right. CCJs, mm-hmm. all of that shit that were nothing to do with that. That's what you end up down, the route down if you don't. It's more than light bulbs sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I've been fortunate.
It's hard learning curve.
Yeah, definitely so.
Well, I could write a book on all the things of not to do and all of the bad things that can happen within property.
Maybe you should.
Drugs,
do you think though, Helen, that is linked to the type of property? Do you know? Do you think that an HMO will attract that kind of audience?
That depends on the area.
Mm.
That depends on the location, yeah. For sure, because obviously, you know, you've got HMOs in London, for example, that are young professionals and they could be getting on the tube to go to Canary Wharf.
Got you. Yeah.
Like, you know, they could be paying 800, 850 to 1200 quid a month for a bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then, you know, so it depends, that's location dependent. Which sure. you will always get then, therefore, your connotations within what demographic that location brings.
Of course.
That's all we'll say on that matter.
Yes, yes. Let's park that one for now. So property moving forward, it's something that you're still very much, you know, are you still working on, you're still doing, you're still developing?
All the time. All the time.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for the news this morning on the, what are we on, 13th of May, mm-hmm. that we've been given that permission to start moving the property market sure. forward for viewing and house sales and awesome. House moves and things.
I've got something that, like, I don't want to spend too much time on property because we could talk about that another time, but I've got a bit of a theory about the property industry as a whole. And I think that we're in for a very, let's say, changing time in property. And let me say what I mean by that is that you look at the Gen Xers, the younger generation, the millennials, they're not bothered about property. They're not bothered about anchoring themselves down. They're like that location independence and the travel. The baby boomers were the ones that started this buying generation. You know, the ones that's like we've got to own a property. Well, in the next 20 or 30 years, the baby boomers are going to start dying off. And so all of a sudden, we're going to have a saturated space of houses that nobody wants.
Great, that's where I come in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm kind of in between those two generations with that. Mm. Like, I'm all for the Gen Xers not wanting to buy property. Mm. Good. Rent mine.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But I think with that comes more multiple occupant style living.
Yeah. You might be right, but then that doesn't necessarily even mean, look how student housing and student accommodation has developed. Mm. You know, multiple occupancy doesn't necessarily have to just be a 4-6-bed house or whatever. You know, you can put purpose-built blocks up for that purpose. Mm. So it becomes more like sort of studio pods and things like that.
Sure.
So yeah, I just think that, you know, with any of the changes in the market, there's always an opportunity.
Definitely so. Last question about property. How damaging has those student style pods been to your HMO business?
I don't have students.
Right.
I don't deal with student lats. Right. That's an area that we decided not to go
not
down.
To go into. Right. Okay.
So I can't comment on that.
So the real takeaway from your journey into property is have a very clear plan, a very clear strategy, and don't deviate from it.
You have to deviate from plans, I do believe. I mean that goes for anything in life or business. It's a fine line for me between being planned and being rigid mm-hmm. on that plan with your eyes on the goal and the commitment to it and everything else. But the fact that you know yourself, you know, that won't always go according to that plan.
Of course.
You know, you need to change. You need to be adaptable.
Yeah.
Look at what the situation we're in now.
Yeah.
Like if we weren't adaptable, we'd break, wouldn't mm-hmm. we? Like there wouldn't be any business.
Well, a lot's
going to
break,
we've got to adapt. We've got to then change. Yeah, oh, massively, yeah.
I think a lot's going to break,
And sometimes through no fault of their own. But with a lot of it, you know, you can't afford to just continue being rigid. Mm. The goal doesn't have to necessarily change, but the path will.
I like it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good. So let's get off of property. Let's get back onto business then. So you started helping entrepreneurs win in 2017.
Yeah.
In London. You're now in Sheffield. What's been the most challenging part of that journey? I don't mean the transition from London to Sheffield, but just business as a whole. What's been challenging for you?
Business always has its challenges, doesn't it? Like, you know, when there's nothing that's straightforward about it, about business, any business, like, you know, you need to be passionate behind what you're doing. You know, when we're saying about that goal, what are your reasons why you're in something for? You know, why is it so important to you? Because then the challenges that happen don't actually define you. They don't stop you in your tracks. They don't knock you off kilter. It might take the wind out of the sails a little bit while, you know, you're rejigging that path that we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
But they don't stop you from doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I have challenges the whole time.
Right, yeah. What's been the biggest blow? What knocked the wind out of your sails the most that really shook you? What you can think of?
It's mainly the property business that does that. Right. Because that has the most biggest ups and downs.
Sure.
And that can be impactful. That can be expensive. That can be like, you could have a deal in the bag for 5-6 months or whatever, and it's gone the next day. Okay. Like something's gone tits up without you even being able to stop it.
Sure.
So, you know, that's when there's issues. And, you know, we've had numerous problems in that industry with different things, whether it be agents, whether it be builders and subcontractors and like the build and renovation teams.
Sure.
But in terms of like the coaching business and all of that, it's very fluid. It's more moving. It's more adaptable, and you're working with people, so it's not as clear cut.
Like,
as a deal on the table, for example, that could change things overnight.
Yeah, sure. What? How do you find working with people as a whole? Do you know, like, do you find it frustrating? Do you find it enjoyable? Like, what frustrates you?
I love people. I love people. I do like to engage with people. You know, share the energy. We discussed this as well.
Totally.
We need that. We're human beings. We thrive off that. It makes us continue doing what we should be doing in terms of existence.
Yeah.
However, I do like to then pull myself away from it a little bit and have my own time as well. Mm. I do love people. They're so complex, right? In one breath, but they're so simple in another breath, because. You know, people try to they don't try half the time, but they overcomplicate everything.
Majorly.
So if we strip things back, like that's when we take things that seem so complex down to its simplest format. You're just like, we're all just the freaking same.
Yeah.
It's like stripping a car back. You can make it look sexy on the outside, on the bodywork, and you know, and put the nicest rims on it, and all of that. But if you strip it back, So I've got the same mechanics behind it.
Of course. What frustrates you about people that you work with, though? Because there's things that must frustrate you.
I'll tell you what frustrates me, right? If that's what you're probing for, I'll tell you what frustrates me. People not taking action.
Oh, I love it, yes.
That massively frustrates me. People not taking action. I could say people not having an ambition, right?
Yeah.
But that would be wrong of me to say that. Because not everybody is ambitious. Not everybody even wants to be ambitious. No. There are some people in life that just want the simple life. And I don't mean that disrespectfully.
No, I just that.
They don't want to continue growing. They just want to do what they're doing day in, day out. And they're quite happy with that. Okay? If you're happy with that, great.
Brilliant.
What I don't like is the people that say they're not happy, but then they don't still take action.
Yes.
And I'm just like, oh, yes, that frustrates the hell out of me.
And why is that, do you think? Why is it that you think people don't take action?
Fear. Laziness. It comes down to those two things, basically. We are scared, but then can we really be bothered?
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's a hassle, you know. If you want to take action, it means that you've got to you've got to be prepared to put the work in.
Of course,
you've got to be prepared for the challenges like you've just been asking me about. I don't always see them as challenges. You see, you know, I can't list the challenges because it's just like it's just a general expectation that's what you get. You know, you take the rough with the smooth. You don't define them and say, oh, that's going to go into my little organized challenge box and that's going to go into my little organized, you know, perfect box. It is what it is.
Sure. So what do you do with your clients then to get their mindset in a position where they are taking action?
I basically take them through the fact of how bad do they want it? What do they want and how bad do they want it? If they don't want it badly enough, they're not going to then be taking the said action. So therefore, it's a case of you either need to redefine your goals and make it to have something that is significant that you actually do want and not think that you want. Because little Johnny's got a Ferrari down the road that's saying that you want one as well. Mm. You know, it's kind of what is important to you. Understand it, what your goal is, and then get emotionally attached to it.
Yes.
Because if there is no desire behind it, there is no willingness to take the action.
How do you help people who don't know what they want? Because that's a major issue a lot of the time, is that they don't actually know what it is that they want.
Okay, so what's making them unhappy then?
Not having what they want.
I establish that with them in terms of, you know, what is making you unhappy, and what does or would make you happy, and why. You know, what do you expect that to bring you? If you've got a goal, right, that could be, I don't know, you want to make your first 10 grand or your first 100 grand or your first £500,000, what do you expect that's going to give you? How do you expect that's going to make you feel? And quite often that people don't even know. So if they don't know, then is that the right path that they should be going down? But if they don't know what they want, it's a case of, let's have a look at your current situation now then. Like, what is it that's making you so unhappy and frustrated now? And I just work on the simple things. And what I get people working on first, and it's what I get them working on first, but I get them revisiting and working on the whole time, is themselves.
Yeah.
It's not the goals, it's not the vision in 10 years' time, it's the here and now, today, themselves. And it starts with the first pillar, which is the health. Because if they're not looking after themselves, they've not got any like idea who they are, their energy levels, you know, they're not confident in themselves, not confident in the body, they're not, you know, they're low on energy, they're low on that get up and go, their health. And that focus gives them that clarity then that you know, that then they feel better and they can, the clouds have lifted a little bit and like, right, okay, I'm ready to go again.
Yeah.
Okay, what are you ready to go again on? Yeah. Let's have a look and we'll clarify your goals.
Brilliant. And it's incredible, isn't it? That, I mean, what always baffles me about people is that they'll pay more attention to the type of food that they feed their animals than what they feed themselves. You know, they'll take better care of the car than the will of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I don't think it's through any fault of their own initially. I think it's a learnt behaviour again. You know, we talked about learnt behaviours before, didn't we?
I think everything's learned behaviours, John. Good, bad, and ugly. It's all learned behaviours. You know, it's from everything. What we're conditioned by, our environments that we're in, and the stories that we've told ourselves, that we've allowed ourselves to believe. And it's about smashing those belief systems down, and those routines and those limiting beliefs as well, to create something that is actually then the story that you want your life to be told like.
Yes.
But, you know, when it comes down to the simple things, like what you've just said about food and looking after, like, yourself, that, you know, they are then, you know, when you say to people about looking after your health and looking after, you know, the simple things, your sleep, your food that you put inside you, and being active and get some exercise, they're all the simple things, right, that people just nod at you and go, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They all know it,
yeah,
but very few people then do it.
Yeah.
And they are the simple things that actually is the secret sauce that everybody's looking for.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that, like, I'm a massive advocate of that you have to take 100% responsibility for everything that happens to you in your life. Whether that's an illness, whether that's a terminal illness, there's something that's happened throughout your life that's accelerated that or caused it. You know, like, and that, I don't want that to sound disrespectful to people, but if obviously they develop some kind of illness or something like that as well, I suppose even down to the situation what we're in right now, do you know, like, if we've not taken precautionary measures to protect ourselves, then there's a possibility that we could feel the pain of it.
Yeah.
And...
What do you do, John, with your clients in terms of, you know, taking responsibility for themselves and, you know, what they need to do to either look after themselves or the business?
Well, I think that you, in terms of what we've just been talking about there, really, is it's about getting them to really buy into what it is that they want. So, like, we talked before about a system, a framework that I developed called ARC, which is ARC, which is the A represents the achieve. The R is the reason and the C is the creation. Like, what are you going to do to create it?
Yeah.
And I think that if people really buy into what it is that they want to achieve and they get a real clear picture about what it is that they want, because we know ourselves, where there's no clarity, there's confusion. And when there's confusion, there's no action.
Yeah.
So if we can get really, really kind of like on a granular level, get really, really clear about what it is that you want to achieve. And I'm not saying, like, I mean, in fact, you'll, Ellen, I want to earn more money. Okay, good. Here's a fiver. No, that's not enough. Like, well, how much more? Like, cause you just said more, £5 more.
Yeah.
And it's about getting clear. Like, what I want 50 grand more or 100 grand or 1 million or five or whatever that may be. But then let's break it down to the ridiculous and do you buy into it? Do you know, is it achievable? Do you really think this is something that is, that you can commit to? Because if you can't commit to it and you don't have no reason to commit to it, then when it comes to the creation side, you're not going to do it. So for me, absolutely, I'm like, we're on the same wavelength in the sense that we've got to get people dialed in.
Yeah.
And not everybody wants that. Not everybody wants to be dialed in.
No, they don't. And that's unfortunately, that is a challenge that I think that we are up against as coaches, to get people to understand that, because what happens is people do come and knock on the door either with the fact of, you know, they don't know what direction to go in, which is fine. You know, that's our job to then help them, like, navigate that. But then the main goal half of the time is that they want more time and they want more money, but they're not prepared to do the work on themselves that will get them that more time and more money. because then that is that's the hard job that needs to be done. And that's where I believe, obviously, yes, it's the challenge, but I'm up for that challenge. And obviously you are, because that's how you operate as well. But this is where I see the disparity within the coaching industry, is because 9 times out of 10, you go and knock on a coach's door and you say, I want to make 50 grand. Okay, I'll help you with that. We'll take you through a 7-step process to get you to making more money. And just disregard you as an individual completely.
Cool. Yeah.
And we'll just get you focusing on your business strategy.
Yeah.
Without even considering, right, that individual could be have a confidence level that's on the floor. Could be having really bad problems at home with the relationship. They could be lacking self-belief. They don't even know what direction then their product should be going in. They don't know, they're not doing the basics on a daily basis in terms of client retention and looking after the relationships with the clients that they're operating from. But because they've gone with a goal that they want to make 50 grand, there is somebody there that will say, I'll take your money from you and I'll show you how.
Exactly.
I don't buy into that. That's why I've then said it's through the systematic process and of the health, excellence and wealth. The business element for me becomes a byproduct of you sorting yourself out as the individual. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that an individual has to be broken and that we fix you, because I hate that type of terminology. Yeah. Like, I'm not telling people or showing people how to live their lives. Mm-hmm. I'm just helping people establish themselves first as the valuable asset to everything then that they transfer into their business lives and every other element of their lives. Because if you're genuinely healthy and happy yourself, that is just infiltrating through everything that you do. You don't even have to focus then necessarily on the 7 steps to making 50 grand, because you're naturally just producing, because you're just drip feeding through in a natural way that you would do with that authenticity from you as an individual.
I love it, Ellen. I absolutely love it. Brilliant. And I think that the interesting thing there, excuse me, I think the interesting thing there is how people's been so conditioned to associate money with success or things with success. So like the house, the car, the lifestyle, the holidays, the cash in the bank, you know, like everyone's, and I think that I was just talking about this yesterday with somebody as well. It's like the idea is to be rich, not to look rich, you know, and I mean rich in all areas of your life, not just financially, you know, like you said, health, wealth, you know, mentally, family, connection, like rich in all areas of your life. But the amount of people who's driving around in, you know, a 70 grand Range Rover Sport, paying £1,000 a month in payments, and the house payment's only 500, they pay more for the car than they do for the place where they live. And it's just, there's just major priority issues going on for a lot of people, I think. But if that's what makes them happy and that's what brings them joy and fulfillment, then fine. Fine. But I think that you're right in terms of like a lot of the, and I don't think it's just coaches, I think it's any industry. There's people out there who will happily take your money off you. Yeah. You come to them and say, I want to do this. And they'll say, fine, give me your money. And they'll happily take it all day long. And I think
you know, it's not just the coaching industry with that. It is definitely any, but it's also true, unfortunately, within the corporate world. Because, you know, corporates, I'm just revisiting back to when I was, you know, running a sales team. Like, I was drowning half the time within the budget and looking after the team. And like, I was literally there from like the first one in the morning sometimes and the last one up before the stadium down at Twickenham were closing. Like, I was asking the staff not to lock me in so I didn't have to sleep there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that becomes an issue. And without going into it in too much detail, but if there was an element of that sort of industry and those sectors that are particularly then highly driven, and you know, highly pressured as well, that you're delivering to a number of different stakeholders on high budgets, that they have some care and consideration and development for your staff, it would be a whole different ballgame. And, you know, I don't want to go off on too many tangents and what have you, and particularly like psychological tangents that I'm not qualified in, so I won't profess that I am. But, you know, if we cared for the individual a lot more, the product and the services that we're delivering out with would be of a higher quality. Yeah. We would have higher productivity, we would have higher retention rates, and, you know, everybody would be singing off a much happier hymn sheet.
Of course,
because the psychological impacts on not doing that, you know, are devastating.
And I think that is starting to change, isn't it? Like, certainly in the corporate sectors, it's becoming, they're realising that they have a lot more responsibility for the wellness and the well-being of their staff in terms of how it connects to productivity and performance.
Yeah, it is changing slowly, and obviously I'm going back a number of years now, so 6-7 years, there's a lot that's changed in that time,
of course,
because it's had to. The awareness of obviously the importance of mental health and looking after your individuals and your staff, your employees, is a lot more prevalent now than it was. So, you know, yeah, that can only get better.
Uh-huh.
And I just think the emphasis for me through anything in life, but particularly in business, is we're not looking at the external strategy. Like, sod your external strategy. It comes down to you as the individual, because you're that core, you're that driver, and you're the one that's going to make the difference with everything. And that's whether you're on your own as a solo entrepreneur up front, or whether you've got a team around you as well. You know, you're the one that's responsible for all of that.
So talk to me about mindset then. So personal development is obviously key in terms of everything. Like, how much time do you dedicate to your own mindset, development, personal development?
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day. It's an ongoing evolution for me and for everyone, or I believe it should be for everyone, every day. Whether it's just 10 minutes or, you know, you're dedicating up to whatever time you've got, I think it should be every single day that you're working on yourself and your mindset. Yeah. Because your mind is a muscle, essentially.
Of course.
You know, exactly the same. So, you know, if you're going to be down the gym and you're pumping your biceps up, you know that if you don't work on that bicep for 6 weeks, it's gone. It's flat as a pancake again. Your mind's exactly the same. Yeah. It needs that stimulus. It needs that care. It needs that attention. It needs you to kind of, you know, take it in the little palm of your hand and give it a little nudge and a little nurture every now and then.
Of course.
It needs it. It goes stale.
I read, I was looking to see where I could see it actually on the bookshelf. I read a phenomenal book by, it's called Dr. Nick Hall.
Okay.
And the book's called I Know What to Do, So Why Don't I Do It? and one of the things he talks about there is stress and how actually stress is good. Where, you know, everyone's talking about how stress is bad, but he says we actually need more stress in our lives, because stress, and this has just made me think when you're talking about the muscle, you go to the gym and you start flexing the muscles, what are you doing? You're tearing the muscle, you're stressing it that much that it tears and it repairs stronger.
Yeah.
Well, using the brain again as the example there, like you're stressing it, you're tearing it to repair it and make you stronger as well.
And that's exactly what I love. Tell me the name of that guy again, Doctor.
Dr. Nick Hall.
I'm just writing it down. That's exactly what I love, because I always say I can't bear being in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
That's me personally. Yeah. And I don't think anybody should, you know, stay in their comfort zone. Mm. There's always that fine line, that fine balance, right? Because you can't live outside of your comfort zone. You can't live under stress and pressure, like in a sustainable manner.
100%.
But it's knowing and it's recognizing, like your muscles and your hair. We all know that once you've tore your muscle, the growth is actually within the repair period, not at the time of growing it.
Definitely.
Okay, well, so it's like it's retracting back. So you've always got that movement.
Mm. Agreed.
But 100%. I'm not there to be in my comfort zone because I thrive off the stress go, what's next? Come on, let's go.
Again. Keeps going, yeah. And you're right. I mean, like I did a blog about this a few years ago, and I titled it "Stress is not the enemy, recovery time is." And I liken it like I liken a lot of the stuff we do as a human to a car. You know, like if you drive your car and you put the wrong fuel in it, the car's not going to run too well. If you put the wrong fuel in yourself, you're not going to work too well, are you? If you don't service yourself from time to time, like your car, then you might break down and things are just not going to work. But also, like using the stress, you could get in your car, you could redline it 8,000, 9,000 revs and drive from here to the gym, flat out, redlining it, like that, and then drive it back. And that car would probably be okay. As long as you get it the time to cool down and recover. But if you drove it around all day redlining it, then eventually the engine will blow up. Yeah. And I think that's the similarities that we have there. Is we can cope with so much stress. We can be that red line, like bopping out all the time. But if we give ourselves the recovery time, we'll be stronger. And I think that's important for us to remember.
It's certainly important because you know what I don't like as well within like the entrepreneurial space. Been quite opinionated on this, aren't I? I'm telling you what I do and I don't like.
But that's what it's
about. It's valid, right? Because to be an entrepreneur, there's a lot of sort of attachment around it in terms of, you know, you've got to be the hustler.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be the badass. You've got to be on the grind the whole time, and I am just like, oh my god, like please no, cringe no, like yes, you know, it's I'm all for action and taking all of that, but I don't give any credit out or medals out for people that are doing what you've just said about redlining it the whole time.
You know,
you need to know and understand that you do need your rest, you do need your periods of time that you need to take and step back from it and let things sit, accept your thought processes, accept your emotions, you know, let your body recover, let your mind recover, let things settle a little bit so that then you can go again and you can grow and you can actually then see what's happening. Because if not, and you're just like this the whole time, just go, like, you're going to collapse. There is nothing sustainable about it. And I don't pat anybody on the back that's like, yeah, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a hustler, and I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going up right through, and I only need 3 or 4 hours sleep. It's like, dickhead.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
I agree. I think there's nothing wrong with that to a degree. But then you have to realise that the recovery time is hugely important. And it's one of the things that I said to my clients, listen, like I'm going to get you into a place where you're going to start to feel very, very uncomfortable really, really quickly. And I'm going to teach you how to get comfortable being uncomfortable. But I want you also to remember that taking some downtime is super important as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's going to be limited at start. You know, at the start, you know, you're not going to be able to have as much downtime as you wanted in your corporate career. But that's not going to be forever, you know. You might have to do that for the first 12, 24. Then we'll start to dial back. And I can guarantee that the more successful your business becomes, the less effort you'll have to apply.
Yeah. Can I just say on that part, though, about the downtime that you just said, I agree with that. And people, you know, you have to thrust people into that uncomfortable stage and, you know, you have to get them off their arse and making them feel uncomfortable, because it's that then that they appreciate, okay, what it's going to actually take from them. But they quickly grow and they quickly adapt. They either do that or then they retract back and rebel against it and say, it's not for me. Yeah. And then it's not for you. Like, you know, you didn't want it badly enough. Back to that part of how bad you want it.
Yeah.
But then it's a case of when you are establishing and learning what downtime is, how do you quantify it? Because there's a difference between common sense relaxation and rest that you need. Or is it just the fact that you want to choose to be a lazy git and sit in front of Netflix for 6 hours watching a box set?
Yeah.
There is.
And I always remember a quote from, I think it was, I had a personal trainer a few years ago, and I'm sure it was him who said this to me. I might be making this up, by the way, but I do remember it anyway. I'm sure it was him. And he said to me, John, he says, don't let the weekend be your week end. And I think that that's so true to what we've just been saying then, is that, yeah, that's fine to take some downtime, but if all you're going to do is then like ruin it by feeding yourself all this shizer, you know, then what's the point?
Yeah.
You're stuffing your face with crap junk food again and just absorbing all this negativity and stuff that you've tried so hard to. And I think that's, I mean, this is something that I find quite frustrating about the whole situation, in terms of we meditate for 10 minutes a day, but for the rest of the 20 hours a day or 24 hours or however many, like whatever the time they have left, is filled with negativity, and they think the 10 minutes is going to fix everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I've meditated today, so everything's fine. Okay, yeah, but what about the other 19 hours that you've just absorbed negativity? Oh, yeah.
I think the thing is, it's kind of, there's no quick answer, is there? There's no quick solution, because if you want to do something right, you've got to do it properly.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not just a meditation app on your phone and meditate for 10 minutes and then, you know, you're going to be all zen and perfect and,
exactly,
and feeling great about yourself. You know, it's a combination of so many different variables. Mm. You know, you don't make a meal with one ingredient.
No.
You don't open a restaurant with just one table and one ingredient, do you? No. There are so many variables that go into it. And it's the same for you as the person and you as the business.
Yeah.
But you've got to be prepared, right? And this is where people don't have the patience for it. They want it now. We live in a society that everything is here and now, and yes, they want the quick solution, which is why they go to the 50 grand seven-step solution.
Because they're like,
that's what I want. That's what I want. It's 50 grand. And you've got all the answers for me. It's like, it's not going to happen. Because even if it does, it's not sustainable. We both work on the long game plan for people so that they're doing things right with that understanding, with that groundwork, with that framework, and that it's systematic, taking them through into something that, you know, that's going to be there for a long time, the longevity out of a successful business. You know, nobody wants to be a flash in the pan, do they? No, 50 grand actually is not a lot of money. You can make it one day and lose it the next second.
A million's not a lot of money. You think about this, I said this to someone the other day. I said, if you think about it, £1 million, right? You've got £1 million and you're used to living on £4,000 a month, which is a very modest amount of money for people to live on right now. You know, it's not a lot. You know, but if you're used to living on £4,000 a month and you've got £1 million, you'd be tapped out after 25 years.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot at all, you know, and I think that the research says now that for you to be the new classification as a millionaire is you have to have at least 9 million.
Yeah.
So now we consider what they call a true millionaire, because a million's no longer got any buying power like it once had.
Well, it doesn't last long enough. That's why.
Yeah. But you're right in terms of, I mean, just going back to the patience. I mean, that is something that's just like I often say to people, I said, you know, the difference between like, our generation, so like we're similar in terms of age, myself and you. I'm not guessing.
Let's just tell everyone you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest. I'm just. but we're in that same kind of generation, and so I'd assume that our parents are probably going to be in a similar generation as well. And I remember like my parents, they had just major patience for everything. Like, they could wait forever, you know, they've got loads of patience and actually very little expectations. Whereas now it seems that we've done a full 360 on that. It's like, well, actually, you know, we flipped it around, took some pieces out, put it back together, and all of a sudden everyone's got huge expectations and zero patience. Like, they want it now, instantly. Give it me now. It's going to take you 6 months. Can't wait. Got to have it now.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like, let's look at these goals that you want to achieve. Let's break it down. Let's look at things and let's be real. It might take you 10 years to achieve this stuff that you want to achieve. Well, I can't wait that long. well, that time's still going to pass.
Time's going to go anyway, so you may as well be chipping away and working.
Let's get started. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Nothing's going to come to anyone. You know, the only thing that's guaranteed is the time's going to pass and we're all going to die.
Of course. And you know, we don't know when.
And what? So we don't know when. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that I often say that to my clients, is that these are two real powerful statements to remember, is that you're going to die and you don't know when that's going to happen. And I think knowing that should hopefully help you shift a lot of your fears. Yeah. You know? So, good. Ellen, what where are businesses going wrong right now? What are they doing wrong?
Currently, right now for me, my biggest observation and where I've been working with a lot of businesses on is communication. Uh-huh. Online presence and communication.
Yeah.
It's out of a lot of people's comfort zones. They fear being online, they fear being present on their social media channels, for example, or communicating and putting themselves out there, basically. A lot of people hide behind it, and particularly people hide behind brands. They don't make anything personable anymore. And that, in my opinion, is where people are going wrong, particularly at this time, because obviously we've not got any personal engagement at this moment in time.
Yeah.
We've only got online. Mm. And you see the difference between the businesses and the business owners that are actually taking their online presence seriously, or the ones that have like shut shop and hid under the table through fear. Yeah. And that's fear of like judgment, fear of getting it wrong, fear of being criticized, fear of not being good enough.
Yeah.
Like fear of, I'm going to swear, fucking up, I'm doing something wrong. Like, you know, but it's a case of like, who cares? It is all about communicating and getting something, getting a message out there. Mm. You know, did you think that the CEO of Sainsbury's and Morrison's and Tesco and all of that would be could envisage themselves filming themselves sat in the dining room at home delivering a message out via YouTube and emails and things like that to people? No. They probably didn't sign up for that as part of the job. Did they have to do it because of what's happened? Yes, of course they did, because they had an obligation to fill. Business owners have obligations to fill when it comes down to the basic parts of communication to their audience and their marketplaces. And I just see a lot of people resting on their laurels, thinking that their loyalty through their followers and their clients and potential clients are going to be coming back through the door when they're opening again. And I can't guarantee that that's going to happen.
Of course. You touched on quite a few different things then, didn't you, about what would stop them from communicating online. Like, what did you say? You said that fear...
of judgment.
Judgment.
Fear of criticism.
Criticism, yeah.
Fear of not being good enough and not getting it right. Well, you know, people have the expectation of themselves that they need to come across perfect.
Yeah. So, like, for that then, I mean... What's your advice to? I'm just trying to think how to word it. So, like, what's your advice to businesses right now that's going through all them kind of situations where they're like, well, I'd like to do it, but I'm scared of the judgment. I'm scared of people calling me out. I'm scared of what if I do it and nobody likes it or comments on it or shares on it or watches it or they judge me or I get it wrong and screw it up. Like, what's your advice to them?
Okay, well, here's the thing. This can put it into massive perspective for people. What's more important, your ego or the existence of your business?
Done.
That is it.
Done. Tick. Move along.
That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Like, you all have to start somewhere. And, you know, it's not saying that, you know, it's something that you need to necessarily do. And particularly those businesses that have got furloughed staff and things, I get that. Some of the staff that have been furloughed are their communication channels.
Yeah.
But somebody somewhere has to take that responsibility and pick up the baton from the relay race and take responsibility for that business and that brand. Yeah. And if there's no communication, you're just basically left to a whole host of assumptions. And I've done this with a few of my clients where we've done some market research online and gone through and had a look and said, when was the last time that business posted anything online? Oh, do you think they're actually still in business, or do you think they've gone bust?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'd be hating that if somebody were judging my business like that. Mm. Oh, do you think she's gone bust? All of that talk that she was doing about HEW, all these businesses, but she's not been promoting herself online or posting any.
True. Yeah, very true.
Remove the ego out of it. Like, you know, and again, this comes down to the fact of, you know, is it even that important to you? Because if your business is that important to you, do whatever it takes.
That's a really good question as well. And I think that an answer that I have for that is I think that a lot of people who are in business aren't treating it like a business, they're treating it like a hobby.
Yeah, but that's part of being an entrepreneur, isn't it?
but I think there's a very dangerous message that's been spread throughout the entrepreneurial world, is that you should change, like find how you can turn your passion into profit. And I think that's a very dangerous statement to make, because some passions don't need to be monetized. Some passions need to be just a hobby.
Yeah, again, it's down to it. I'm all over it with you on that. I was being facetious by my response as well there, because of previous conversations that we've had before. But I do agree. There's a lot of kind of grey areas. There's a lot of fluffiness around it as well, with kind of the entrepreneurial thing. I do think that if you have to turn your passion into profit, you've got to question, is that really a profitable decision to be making?
Mm.
Not all passions are profitable. But again, it comes down to what's important to you.
What's important to you?
Is it the fact that you just want to be happy and enriched in your life through your passion? Mm. Or do you actually want to make a profit and make money out of it?
Exactly.
So, there's no right or wrong answer to it, and it's got to come down to the individual, I believe. But I do think that it shouldn't be promoted on the fact of like the entrepreneurial aspect to things, like if you are just doing a bit of a side business or something.
Yeah.
Having a side business does not make you an entrepreneur.
No, it doesn't. No, not at all. It's just being thrown around trees. And I think that's the thing, there's a lot of push about this. I call it that we've been spoon-fed a lot of entreporn. Entrepreneurial porn, yeah, entreporn, where it's like made out that it's cool and it's sexy to be an entrepreneur. When we know, you know, I know, and everyone that we work with know that it's bloody hard work. You know, you've got to put the graft in, you've got to take the hits, you've got to have those devastating blows. You've got to, you know, you've got to be aware that finances is going to be probably challenging and problems you're going to face. It's not cool. It's not sexy. It's hard bloody work.
Nothing's cool and sexy about hard work.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm a big believer of, you know, everybody says about don't work hard, work smart. Mm. Well, I like to get people and me working hard first. Mm. And then you establish how you work smart from there.
Give me a virtual high five for that. Because I say that all the time. I mean, the two statements I say to that is that if you can work smarter and you can work harder, why not just do both?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, why do I do one when you can do both? If you can work smarter and you can work harder, let's do both of them.
I'm
just going to say then, and how do you know where to work smarter until you've worked hard?
Exactly. And again, that statement in itself, don't work harder, work smarter. Again, it's telling people that there's a quick solution.
Yeah.
There isn't. Yeah. Like, sorry, yeah. This is the reality. There is no quick solution.
Yeah.
We need to be in it for the long game, and we can't even put a date on that.
We don't know what it is, exactly. It's not like a child. We know it takes 9 months to grow. You know, we've no idea how long this beast is, this Death Star is going to take to build.
Yeah.
Who knows? Ellen, it's been absolutely wonderful. I mean, we could quite easily, I'm sure we could do this for hours and hours and hours. Maybe we should. Maybe we should do like that's a challenge, actually. We could see if we could do a 24-hour podcast non-stop for 24 hours.
I think we could.
I believe so. Easily, quite easily.
I'm for that.
Yeah, let's put something on the schedule. We'll crowdfund it, and we'll see if we can raise a lot of cash, and we'll donate it to the NHS Foundation or whatever.
On a serious note, I'm up for that, yeah. And we can get guests in. And come in and we can have chats with different guests throughout it.
Let's brainstorm it. Alex, it's been absolutely wonderful. Helen, is there any questions that I've not asked you today that I probably should have asked you that people will find useful?
Oh, fucking heck. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's lots. Save it for the 24-hour one. I'm not sure on that one, if I'm honest.
Okay, cool.
The most intriguing thing I think that people like to ask and find out is kind of like how I operate and what I do. Because a lot of people, when they're coming into sort of, I don't want to say transformation, but changing things up a lot more so things are being more efficient and more effective within themselves and within their business.
Yeah.
We emulate, don't we? We emulate and we go off the back of a leader that is doing something that you can learn from and start to pick up pointers from. So people always ask me what I do. It would be that in terms of, daily conduct, daily routines,
yeah.
That kind of thing that all kind of like the secret aspects of things, but that's how the business has been formed, is how I operate, why that's important.
Sure. So setting up a ritual almost.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's not a miracle morning.
Not a miracle.
And you shan't see me at 5 a.m.
what time do you rise?
It's changed massively since this lockdown. I think
the lockdown's changed a lot of habits for people.
I've still got all the basics in there, but they're probably just in different orders, that's all.
Yeah.
But going back to what life was like when you've got your gyms open and your yoga studios and things, it's not uncommon for me to be in the gym between 6:30 and 7 o'clock in the morning.
Got you.
But if I don't do it in the morning, then I do it at night.
Do it anyway.
So yeah. It's kind of like, I just work what's, I'm not a massive, massive creature of habit that's religious all at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
I get you, yeah.
I do have basic fundamentals that have got to happen during the day.
Sure. What is one of the major fundamentals that you have to have? Like, if you don't do this thing, like, what makes you think, what's the one thing?
It would be something like working out or exercise.
Exercise, yeah.
Even if that's just a basic going out for a walk, there needs to be something that is cashing into my health bank every day, because that's the injection of all of, what I need to operate on.
Of course.
Whether that's stimulating you in the morning or it's releasing on an evening. Either which way, there is always a benefit behind it. I just thrive off that natural medicine.
Yeah.
And that has to happen for me.
Every single
day. If not, it's, yeah.
What happens if you don't do that? Like, how do you feel?
Just shit.
Yeah.
Like frustrated. Uh-huh. Tired, lethargic.
Yeah.
It's an energy. It's either an energy giver or an energy reliever.
Mm.
So, like, I use it to its advantages at either end of the day.
Yeah. And I think anyone that's been to the gym and exercise will realise this. Like, you might come out of there completely depleted and feeling broken and beaten, but it feels incredible. And then that then energises you.
Yeah. It's the mindset that we have and we tell ourselves before we go that it's going to be too much hard work. So it's too much hassle to get up in the morning or go. It's too much hassle to get your gym gear either on or in the bag. It's too much hassle to get there or do it. And we have umpteen number of thoughts that go through our minds that tell us not to do it.
Yeah.
Excuses come up time and time again that tell us that we don't need to do it. Why do you need to do that? If you're tired, rest.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Just go. stop holding yourself back, go and focus and on that situation, focus on the outcome, not how you feel at the time.
Yeah, so true. Do you know one of the statements that I often say to myself, because we all go through this, do you know, none of us are, you know, we're all humans, we've all got our flaws and stuff. And so one of the things I find is that I often have these conversations with myself, is like, oh, I'll do it later, or I'll do it like that. And it's like, do you know what? I've got to communicate with my brain, and I'm telling my brain, listen, I am not here to negotiate with you. Do you know, this is what I'm doing. I'm not negotiating with you about it. I'm bloody doing it. Do you know? And I find that by me saying that statement to myself, I'm not here to negotiate. I'm going to do it. It's
what are your non-negotiables then? On a day-to-day basis, what are your non-negotiables?
That for me, it's the main thing for me is the personal development. So like, I have to feel like I've developed something, whether it is through stimulation in terms of exercise or a workout, or whether it's that I've learned something new, or I've applied something new. It's got to be something that I've developed personally. Like at the minute, it's not in here, I'm doing the guitar. So like, I think that I just love, for me, if I don't feel like I'm moving forward in any capacity, I feel like I'm going to explode. Do you know, like, yeah. I've got to be learning new things. Like, so I was learning the piano over the weekend. On the iPad, well, I'm trying to learn the piano. I've got a guitar that I've been learning for a year. So it's just development, whether it's business or personal or like whatever that may be. I feel that if I don't get in my daily fix of at least 20 minutes, then I think that I'm failing as a person. Do you know, like, if I can't make time for myself to do something that I enjoy and love, then I've got something, the mix is off.
Again, we've both come from two coaches, two routines and non-negotiables, right? What is the first thing that we have to do? It comes from a personal development underpinning.
Yeah, totally.
And with that, that's the foundation that then it helps you flourish and everything else. I know people that would automatically say the thing that they have to do before they go to bed at night is know that they've made some money that day.
Mm. Okay. Right, okay.
But for me personally, it always has to come down to you, because you're responsible for making that money every day.
Well, without you, there's no money, is there?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Good stuff. Helen, where can people find out more about what you about yourself and what you do and how you can help people?
Yep, first port of call would be the website, which is www.helpingentrepreneurswin.com. And you will find all of my social media channels on there as well. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. And I also have a podcast, which is Who Wants to Be an Entrepreneur? John, you will be featuring on that very, very shortly as well. Awesome. And returning the favour and having you on my show as well. So yeah, everybody can get me on any of those channels. As I say, I'm very, very present. You can't not find me. But yeah, please do give me a follow. I'll appreciate that.
Awesome. Brilliant. Helen, thank you so much for your time. It's been incredible.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Take care.